This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Zuleika. She's founder and director of the Story Dancer Project, and every year she puts on a concert called the Rumi Concert. This year it's happening on Saturday, the 14th of November at the Lensic at 7 o'clock. Welcome, Zuleika, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
So every year we talk about the Rumi Concert and we talk about Rumi, but I thought this year we could do that maybe a little bit at the end, but I want to catch up with you and what you're up to and what you've been doing. I mean, you have this very interesting life. You are a dancer, you're a storyteller, you're an artist, you're a healer. You work with some of the most marginalized people in the world. And I don't even know how you really put it all together.
That's a funny thing. When you said the marginalized people of the world, I can feel my heart starting to burst open and I feel like tears coming in my eyes because it's so true. And I think people don't always know that about me. It's not something you put on a banner. It's something that keeps happening, you know. And I think it started out years ago when I went all over New Mexico to forgotten elementary schools of the universe and did story dancing and performing for thousands of kids as an artist in residence. And the way I did that inspired a whole way of working with people through simple exercises that could be done in gigantic groups of people, especially at that time children, that were quite rambunctious. So you couldn't yell, "Okay, everybody be quiet now." You had to do something that would catch them. And of course I have my bells that I wear on my feet when I'm dancing. They're from India. But then I would do a movement and have 500 kids do it. And from doing that over and over, it occurred to me that people could get a stretch in the middle of life and they didn't have to change their clothes. And of course, yoga's great and Tai Chi's great and Nia's great and all those Zumbas and everything that everyone's doing.
And going to gym class if you're a kid.
Yes, and going to gym is great and recess is great. Sometimes they don't have it anymore. And so out of that came something that we've now trademarked called Take a Minute for Your Life, which you interviewed me about when it came out.
Yeah.
And it's these core wellness exercises that are very simple that open up the joint, the system, the hinge system of the body. And when you do that in a simple way, it can recalibrate your nervous system. So that's one side of it. And knowing that, I somehow got thrown into places like where in India where they have no running water and there's all these women and their eyes are so shiny and happy and they're so overburdened and their joints ache and they all have spondylitis. I didn't even know what that was.
What is it?
It's when the back of your neck fuses up with your top of your back and it just gets worse and worse, and the pain goes down your arms. And many people have it, it turns out. And when you do these simple exercises, it relieves the pressure. And so I started doing this with them, and they became happier, and their pains. I can't say we fix everything. We don't. But we are useful, and the pain abates, and they learn how to do it themselves. And in India, we've trained recently 35 women who are working in 80 microfinance groups that equals about 1,000 women in this one Muslim, very poor sector of Delhi. And they're all starting all their microfinance meetings with these simple exercises. That's kind of an offshoot, but I keep finding myself in these places where people are stunning and incredible, and they have aches and pains, and they don't know you can lift your arm up and wiggle your shoulder and you could feel better. And this has become what do we call it? We call it self-care. Self-care, we do it with nurses and doctors. We do it with teachers now. And I can go on and on. I guess most recently in Santa Fe, we have a partnership with Esperanza Shelter for Battered Families, and it's a support center here, and they have incredible groups for survivors and offenders, and as well a shelter. And I started out working with the counselors, doing self-care for the counselors who are sometimes 24 hours on duty with very tragic situations, women in very tragic situations. Break your heart, you know, escape, put your clothes in the dryer, run out the door, grab your kid and your backpack, disappear, take a bus to New Mexico from Florida, find the shelter.
Wow.
You know, situations that people find themselves in. And I started working with these women who are beautiful and transient and very traumatized. And then that led me over to the support center, and now we work inside of many of the support groups for survivors, and most recently I've been working with offenders, which has really, I never ever dreamed I would be doing something like this, and it's very humbling.
You've just said so much.
I'll be quiet now.
No, I mean, we could spend hours on each one, but I mean, starting with the kids in what you called forgotten elementary schools of New Mexico, you're going around to these places where they've probably never had an artist in residence.
Right.
And so being exposed to art and movement and to the whole idea that dance and movement and expression are part of our human heritage and the way we get through a day and the way we get through our lives.
So beautiful how you put that. Part of our human heritage. I think that it is part of our heritage that we've forgotten, you know, or it's become an art. You have to be an artist, but what about the natural joy of being in a body, however it works? And you know, in India, where one of our projects is with palliative cancer patients, I've learned to do this with people who don't have the use of their whole body. So that comes up as well. And there is joy also. I mean, it's amazing. I worked with a man who had an amputated leg and he had back pain and he had a pain in his leg. And at first we thought it was that phantom pain. And it turned out that I got this inspiration to do a shoulder exercise with him that was very simple, and while we were doing it he just burst out laughing, and then he looked at me and he said, "Well, I don't feel the pain and I started laughing. I thought, well, I don't know what to attribute any of it to, but you know, there is a joy component with all this, and there is a connection when people connect, and there's some kind of freedom to be connected, you know. Something lifts up.
Well, and your work, like when you talk about it, to me, it speaks so much to who we are naturally as opposed to who we are in the kind of crazy society we live in, which has many beautiful pieces to it. And at the same time, so many of us are way overburdened, as you say, or are working sitting down all day long, or are stressed by ongoing violence. And what your body might do naturally to heal itself or to express itself, I think is something that your work really brings out in people.
And it's so simple. I mean, I sometimes feel, you know, like, really? Is this what we're going to do today? Over and over again, and people smile, you know. A few weeks ago, I was at a nursing supervisors meeting in Gallup, New Mexico, in an Indian Health Services hospital, and I was presenting this idea to all of these nursing supervisors, and they all looked at me. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. What are we here to do? And we put our hands together and took a stretch over our heads, and everybody started laughing, and they said, oh, this feels good. And then I got to talk about what happens when you feel good in the middle, like you said, of all this burdens and stress. Sometimes I'd like to be in my studio, really, practicing and dancing. But life keeps boomeranging me back to these places. And the people uplift my heart, you know. And when I see people's burdens get lifted, even for 10 minutes, it's so amazing.
And part of it is the teaching of how you take that into your day without the teacher there. It's not like going to yoga class where you have to have the teacher each time, but learning to do some of these things yourself.
Yeah. So we're trying to do more trainings in the places that we serve. So instead of me bringing a bunch of people somewhere, I prefer to share this with the people of the place and then give it to them. They can have it, and then they'll use it in the way that is appropriate in their village or their sector or their community. They might not do everything the way I do it. I've had to learn about that, you know, because at first you want everyone to do it exactly how you know it's like this. But I have a DVD and they can use that, and then they can jump off from it. You know, these days everyone's doing so many things. So that people say, well, I can't put my arms over my head. So we say, okay, let's put them out this way. And we find different ways that apply, that adapt to what's needed.
Because you work with so many different kinds of people, I mean, one day you might be working with elementary school kids. The next day you're working with overstressed nurses. The next day you're working with people and women in battered women families and battered women's shelters, battered families for shelters for battered families. And the next day you're working with perpetrators. How do you adapt your work to each group?
You know, I must be wired for it. I think we all are, actually. It's some kind of way of feeling humanity and allowing myself to... It's such a simple thing I'm bringing. Sometimes I feel, you know, like, well, it's not very much, but we'll give it a try. I know that's not exactly your question. I'm fishing for the answer. I mean, I just set the dial in me sets to the bodies and the beings where I am. You know, like I walk into the room of the offenders and they're big. Most of them are much bigger than me. And I'm with a counselor and they're a certain way. I've learned to use my humor, but not too much. And I've learned to slow things down with them. They like to do kind of slow exercises, and I show them about using your body and your breath, and then what it feels like to relax. So I guess the answer is each group teaches me what's needed. You know, if I'm a good student. So I have to be a student everywhere I go. That's the real answer, I think. So if it's a group of women and they're all tired, if I don't try to make them not tired, if I accept that they're tired, then my body kind of picks up how they're feeling, so I can do things with them in their tiredness, and their tiredness might shift. Something like that, you know.
Explain to us what that might look like. Like, you go into a group of women who are stressed and tired, and you accept that instead of saying, hey, let's everybody perk up and do a happy dance.
Well, I might put on music. Like, in one of the survivors groups of women I went in the other day, it was an evening group, and they were really tired from work. So I started out very slowly, and I said, oh, how are you? Oh, I'm so tired. How are you? Oh, I had a hard day at work. Everybody mentioned they were tired, so I said, well, let's just start very simply. And we started rubbing our hands together and massaging our shoulders, and, oh, that feels good, that feels good. And after a while, everybody was smiling, so I did put on some happy music, and we did get up and move around, and then they all started laughing so much because they didn't know that they could feel good when they were so they thought they were tired. So sometimes we don't even know how we're really feeling. We think that the apparent burden that we're under is the way that we're feeling. And me too. I mean, I know a lot about it now, but still, it can catch you, you know? How are you? Oh my God, there's so much to do. Do you think that's how you're feeling? But inside of that, if you can, for me, get in the body, you know?
How does that work with what you call perpetrators? Are these prisoners?
They call it offenders.
Offenders.
Yeah.
Offenders.
They're not prisoners in this case. This is they're court ordered to go to a support group for 52 weeks. It's part of their treatment. And I think it's the last stop before prison.
So if they reoffend,
it's
kind of their last
this
thing. So how do you work with people? Because presumably people who are offenders are carrying around a lot of probably anger, things like
I've had to learn a lot. I mean, that's why I said I must be a life student because every situation is so different. But every situation I'm in is so different. Like if I'll come back to that, but if you think about how I work in India with women who have been sold into sex trafficking, so they're slavery. They're in a kind of slavery. That's a whole. That's like the other side of this. But with the offenders, what has come up over and over again is that people have taught me that this is transgenerational. That's a word I learned, and that somebody who has been in this offense has had this done to them, and that person who did it to them had it done to them. So this is a repeating pattern of behavior that has been ongoing in people's families over and over. So I can't, as I said, I can't fix the problem, but what I can do with them is work with the idea. And I told them one day, it's like we all live in a pressure cooker. And you know, when you put the pressure cooker on the gas and it starts to rock and it goes and when it gets really going and you're cooking your rice, there's a point where you have to loosen the top so that it won't blow off. And that's the image that I use sometimes when we're doing these exercises, is that we want to catch the lid before it blows off. We want to come to notice when we're tense. And so we use these exercises to relieve the tension, that relieves the stress that is lurking inside of the body. Because when the person is nervous, that in any case, it could be shame, it could be any of us. When you get nervous, we lock our joints. You know, sitting around, you see people and they're wiggling their foot. I have a theater piece that I made about waiting in a chair, and I do all the emotions, and people laugh a lot, but it's from a study that I'm doing all the time of how emotions affect our body. When you're depressed, we go into a slump. And we even say, how are you? I'm in a slump.
Yeah, or the pressure cooker metaphor, that's its own metaphor, or he blew his lid.
And the thing I mentioned last week to a group, I was working with women veterans, which was really something for me. And I said to them, isn't it funny when something touches us, we say, I was so touched. And then we say, I was so moved. That really moved me. And so we use metaphors that have to do with movement and feeling all the time. So I try to bring those together.
Now, have you found, so you're working with, for example, these men who are considerably bigger than you for a year. Are you getting feedback that the work is affecting them, that it's changing them, that it's allowing them to break these transgenerational cycles?
I can't say that I'm doing that, but I can say that in the last few months, when I've gone there, they've thanked me when I'm leaving. And I told them a few weeks ago, I won't see you for a few weeks because I'm going to go and do this other project. And they seem to be, they said they were going to miss it. So I miss doing this. And that touched me a lot when they thanked me, because at first, we didn't talk at all. I was scared, and they were like, oh, no, what are we going to have to do now? You know, and it was embarrassing, I'm sure, for them to have me come in. And I play very calming music that's pretty in the background. But over time, I think I've come to trust coming to the groups, and it feels like we have a kind of container that we're in together. And as I said, there's always a counselor there. So that's comforting to both, I think, them and me as well.
We're talking to story dancer Zuleika. And we'll talk about the Rumi concert, which is coming up soon in a few minutes. But you were talking a moment ago about working with trafficked women in India, probably very young women, as so many of these people are who are in virtual slavery. How on earth do you find them, or do they find you, or do you get into situations where you are in a, you know, teaching movement classes or whatever to them?
Well, one thing is about our nonprofit is called the Story Dancer Project. That's what I started, and we are an international artistic health resource organization. And the way that we work is we partner with other organizations. So I don't actually go to India and look for a group of trafficked women. But we partner, and in this project, we're partnering with a group called New Light. But we have several partners. Esperanza in Santa Fe is one of our partners, and we have many partners. And that's how I started working with New Light. And we dreamt up this idea because New Light's mission is to care for all the children of the sex workers and educate them. It's quite an amazing organization. And I was very moved by their work and started working with all their high school and college girls who live off the campus, so to speak, in group housing. And I started going there and doing movement classes with the girls in the girls' homes. And one day I just looked at my friend, this woman who runs it became my friend, and I said, well, what about the mothers who are the sex workers? I want to work with them. And everybody looked at me like, wow, that's a really good idea. And so we did several pilots, and now we're about to embark on this project that is, it's a kind of a retreat seminar idea. It's pretty wild. And we bring 25 women from the red light district of a city into a studio or some kind of a beautiful place that we find. And for 3 days, we do movement work. We do these core wellness work. We sit together and speak confidentially. We do artwork, and we talk about relaxation, and we practice it. We eat very good food together. And then they go home at night, and we do this for 3 days. And this is becoming an actual program now that I think next year we're going to do in India, in hopefully 5 red light districts in India.
Now, these red light districts, I mean, we're talking about women who have often been either kidnapped or tricked or in some way or other find themselves in sex work without having that have been their intention at all. I mean, the whole word sex worker, I think, was coined, or the term was coined, to make it less negative or more intentional. But these aren't people who intended this.
No. And actually, in a concert a few years ago, I was given some of the stories by these young women and allowed to use them. And I actually told some of their stories as a dance piece in a performance. It was hard to do because when you say I was 13, my parents took me one morning and dressed me for my wedding, and I was married to an old man. And when he found out that I wasn't a suitable bride for him, he threw me out, and the only people who would take me were the sex workers, and that was the only place I could go. My parents wouldn't let me come back. Things like that, like all the mores and the morals, and that we don't have in that way. We might have in another way, but we have maybe unspoken, but still we don't have that. It was horrendous. So another situation where I'm like a baby and I have to learn this whole culture, that not just the Indian culture, but this culture of sex workers, and that that's a thing, and that people do this, and that they have kids. And, you know, I didn't know any of this.
Do you ever find yourself wishing you could take them away or yeah. adopt one of them? Or
I mean, you know, everything that I seem to be in, I want to fix it, make it okay, make it better, make it nice for all these girls, make it nice for all these people who are sick in a room that has never running water. You know, that's a really hard thing, to be around all of this. And so that's why I said India's taught me a lot, which is one of the things is you might not be able to fix it, but you can make it better, you can be useful. And that's really how I can be with myself when I can't fix these situations. I mean, there are organizations where people do adopt people, and there's so many things anyone can do. I can't do everything.
We're talking to Zuleika, founder and director of the Story Dancer Project, and let's talk for a moment, because we've got a few minutes left, about the upcoming concert, the Rumi concert. It happens every year. This year it's Saturday, the 14th of November at 7 o'clock at the Lenzik. And Coleman Barks will be back. He's a poet himself, and he's a translator of Rumi, and you will be dancing, story dancing. There'll be some musicians there. This whole thing really has become sort of taken on its own life. Do you travel with this? Does it only happen in Santa Fe?
Yeah, no. I mean, Coleman and I met years ago, and we did one. I wanted to dance the poetry of Rumi because I'd studied it a lot, and he said we could try it out. I think our first concert was at the Elliott Bay Bookstore. I was on a box, a giant box, and he was on the floor speaking, and that was our first concert. And then we started adding musicians, and I moved to Santa Fe, and then we did the first big one here. And then we've done a lot in San Francisco, and yeah, we've gone around quite a lot now and then. Somebody has to produce it. It's a big deal. This one, I'm excited to say we're bringing back Jai Utal and with Glenn Velez, which is something a little different combination. Jai has been here in the past, long time ago. We did this with Jai Utal and Jeffrey Gordon, who's not with us anymore. And of course, we've worked a lot with David Darling. But this year, we just thought it would be a fun little twist. We worked with Jai in California, I think a year ago, at Herbst Theater, and it was so much fun. So a lot of people know him from the kirtan scene. So I think it will be an interesting evening with Jai and Glenn Velez, of course, the drummer par excellence, and Coleman with his southern
reading the Sufi poet with his charming southern accent.
I love that. That's one of my favorite things. It's so American.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like you wouldn't find that anywhere except here.
Yeah. Well, Zuleika, it's just great to have you back on the Radio Cafe. If people want to find out more about Zuleika's work, they can go to storydancer.com. And for tickets to the Rumi concert, you can call the Lenzik at 988-1234. Or go to ticketssantafe.org. Once again, Zuleika, founder and director of the Story Dancer Project, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. It's so much fun to talk with you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to Studio X for their technical support and web design.